Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, an update on the coronavirus as the U.S. is now over 100,000 deaths. Also, for our weekly Earth Watch, we speak with Amy Kober of American Rivers about COVID-19 and water contamination. The Trump administration is attempting to deport a death squad leader back to Haiti. Emmanuel Toto Constant was serving time in a U.S. prison for crimes committed on U.S. soil after he fled Haiti. There is an outcry against his return. Who is Emmanuel Constant and why is there opposition to his return? We also remember Father Jean-Just, the Haitian liberation theologist and fighter for the poor. Yesterday marked the 11th anniversary of. We speak with human rights attorney Brian Kanan. Brian worked on human rights in Haiti for over two decades. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Protests in the streets of Minneapolis for a second night over the death in police custody of unarmed black man George Floyd. He gasped for breath as a white officer kneeled on his neck for up to 8 minutes. Stores were set on fire and looted. A man was found fatally shot near a pawn shop. The property damage stretched for miles. The police officer, Derek Chauvin, who kneeled on Floyd's neck, and three others who watched without intervening were fired Tuesday. Yesterday, the city's mayor called for Chauvin to be criminally charged. Bridget Floyd said the officers involved in her brother's death should be charged with murder.
I would like for those officers to be charged with murder because that's exactly what they did. They murdered my brother.
Federal authorities say in a statement this morning they are launching a robust criminal investigation into Floyd's death. Hundreds of people protesting Floyd's death blocked a Los Angeles freeway, damaging California Highway Patrol cars. The demonstration was led by Black Lives Matter LA. The U.S. has surpassed a grim milestone in the coronavirus pandemic, 100,000 reported deaths. That number is believed to be an undercount, but it represents the stark reality that more people in this country have died from the virus in a few short months than from the Vietnam and Korean Wars combined. Also striking was the silence from the White House. President Trump made no public expression of grief or any comments at all to mark the moment. Early on, Trump downplayed the severity of the coronavirus, likening it to the flu and predicting the U.S. would never reach 100,000 deaths. On Capitol Hill, House Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy announced a lawsuit against House Democrats for allowing proxy voting. Democrats aimed their fire at Trump for his failures. Christopher Martinez reports.
Speaker Pelosi says everyone wants the country to open up, but science says the path forward depends on testing and treatment. She says Donald Trump is not handling that well, and she took a shot at Trump's push for a large Republican convention without limits on attendance.
I don't think there's anyone who would say at this point that tens of thousands of people should come together for a political convention, no matter how great an ego trip it is for somebody. It's dangerous for so many.
New York Democrat Grace Ming represents Queens, the borough hardest hit by the pandemic. She says President Donald Trump has wasted time and lives by downplaying the pandemic, and now he wants to reopen the economy despite his failures.
We did not have sufficient testing capabilities at the beginning of this pandemic, and we still don't have a robust plan now. I will tell you, as a parent of two school-age kids, our schools have a more robust and centralized system for testing and tracing head lice than this president does for the coronavirus.
I'm Christopher Martinez.
2.1 million people applied for unemployment benefits last week, despite the gradual reopening of the economy around the country. That brings the running total since the coronavirus shutdowns took hold in mid-March to about 41 million. President Trump is preparing to sign an executive order aimed at curbing liability protections for social media companies. This comes after Trump lashed out at Twitter for applying fact checks to two of his tweets. The proposed order, which administration officials said he could sign today, would direct executive branch agencies to study whether they can place new rules on the companies. Legal experts have expressed doubts much could be done without an act of Congress, and that order is certain to face legal challenges. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer responded, "If President Trump doesn't like Twitter, he can do everyone a favor and stop tweeting." China officially has ratified a plan to write a national security law for Hong Kong. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam said in a statement that new laws would sanction an extremely small minority of criminals who threaten national security and not affect what she called the legitimate rights and freedoms enjoyed by Hong Kong residents. Hong Kong's pro-democracy opposition described the Chinese law as the end of the one-country, two-systems arrangement that was supposed to grant freedoms to Hong Kong as a semi-autonomous territory. Pro-democracy lawmaker Claudia Mo said from now on, Hong Kong is nothing but just another mainland Chinese city. She spoke to India Today.
And anything that's considered politically undesirable, incorrect, they just might be able to trump up charges against you. Charges like subversion, separatism, and terrorism, or collusion with foreign agents.
I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Today, we are going to turn our attention yet again to Haiti. Millions of people demanding, of course, there have been an uprising going on in Haiti, demanding the resignation of the U.S.-backed president, Jovenel Moïse. He was put in place in an election that was very, very questionable. A lot of charges of fraud, a very, very low turnout in 2017. Thousands of Haitians since his election have been participating in almost weekly protests against his government, in some instances daily. When I was on the ground in Haiti and I did reports when the Sojourner Truth team was on the ground, we also did video of the massacres that have happened in La Saline and Bel Air and other places, and the thugs involved in these massacres, a kind of a paramilitary force reminiscent of the Tonton Macoute under the Duvalier dictatorship regime. They have been terrorizing people, and they are doing it again. But there's also a link to the present administration of Jovenel Moïse. Additionally, the administration, U.S.-backed administration of Jovenel Moïse, has been named in part for the disappearance of $3.8 billion that Venezuela loaned to Haiti that was supposed to help uplift the Haitian people. That's a lot of money. That's $3.8 billion that have just walked. Haiti is the most impoverished country in the Western Hemisphere, as you've often heard me say. It's also a matter of pride for a lot of us of African descent. It was the first Black Republic that we know of. They had a very, very successful slave rebellion, where they defeated the most powerful army of the day at that time, which was Napoleon's army. And it seems as though Haiti has been paying a price ever since. The United States slapped a 30-year boycott on Haiti after the Haitian Revolution, and also invaded Haiti countless times, raided the Haitian treasury, etc. So the Haitian people are still very, very much embroiled in what they say to complete the revolution that they began way back in 2004. before, but to talk about what is going on now, because there's this death squad leader who has been in prison in the United States, and now the Trump administration is threatening to return him to Haiti. There has been an outcry by Haitian human rights activists and other human rights activists against his return. And I would now like to welcome to Sojourner Truth to discuss all of this, in particular, who is this man, Emmanuel Constant, human rights lawyer, Brian Concanon, director of Project Blueprint, which works for a progressive human rights-based U.S. foreign policy organization. Brian has worked on human rights in Haiti for 25 years, including co-managing the Office of International Lawyers, or BAI, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti from 1996 to 2004, and founding the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, which he directed from 2004 to 2019. And along with human rights attorney Mario Joseph, Brian helped to prepare the prosecution of the Rabatou massacre trial in 2000, one of the most significant human rights cases anywhere in the Western Hemisphere. And Brian could fill us in about what all of that is about. Brian Concanon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Margaret. It's an honor to join you.
Okay, so Brian, who is this man, Emmanuel Toto Constant? Why is he notorious in Haiti? What are the crimes he was charged with in Haiti, and also other crimes that he was implicated in Haiti?
Emmanuel Constant was the leader of the FRAP death squad. And the FRAP was active from 1991 to 1994 during a military dictatorship. And what FRAP did was to do the dictatorship's dirty work, because it was bad press for the soldiers to go around shooting people. The FRAP death squad would go around doing the beating and the shooting and raping and torture, and in a way that was slightly less traceable back to the government. No one knows exactly how many victims of FRAP there were. It was certainly in terms of deaths, it was certainly in the high hundreds, most likely in the thousands, more for torture and other attacks. The problem is that what his MO was going after, mostly poor neighborhoods, that supported democracy, especially groups that were affiliated with the Lavalas movement. And the problem with...
And Lavalas, that's the party headed by Jean-Martin Aristide, right?
Exactly. And the 1991 to 1994 coup was all about exiling Jean-Martin Aristide and reversing the progressive policies that he was trying to put into place. And you're back in a similar situation now, where you have a right-wing government that is supported by the U.S., as the 1991 to 94 military dictatorship was. And they're doing a lot of the same things that Constant and his death squad did back in the 90s. They are attacking poor neighborhoods and using thugs, and with some police help and some coordination by senior government officials. They're going into poor neighborhoods and terrorizing, killing, burning houses, raping, torturing, all as a way of preventing pro-democracy activists, especially the Lavalas movement, from asserting their rights and pushing for progressive policies. So far, what the government has been doing has been at a lower scale than what Constant did, and so the risk is that Constant returning means that he's going to scale up the operation, that it's literally putting gasoline into the fire hose.
Yeah, I mean, it is so shocking that for this guy even to be considered to be returned to Haiti. And the scary part about it is that he was found guilty, by the way, after that coup, that first coup against President Aristide, because remember, there were two. There was the 2004 coup. But after that first coup, and Constant and his thugs, they went around. I mean, I saw a number as high as 3,000 Aristide supporters who were slaughtered at the time. Constant fled Haiti to the United States, but he was found guilty, thanks to your work, Brian, and also the work of Mario Joseph and your team in absentia. But if he returns to Haiti, he now legally has the right to a new trial. And what are your thoughts about that? Because given the fact that, first of all, there's a connection now with Constant and somebody pretty high up in the newly put back together army that Jovenel Moïse put in place. This is after President Aristide had disbanded that army that was notorious for just doing the bidding of the United States and terrorizing the Haitian grassroots. So he already has a high up connection on the ground in Haiti. So a lot of people are very worried about what could happen if he returns, maybe even a possibility of him walking free.
Oh, I think most people expect there's a probability of him walking free. So you mentioned Jean-Robert Gabriel, who was a member of the high command under the military regime. So one of the top leaders. He was convicted, like Emmanuel Constant was convicted in absentia in the Raboteau trial and convicted of murder. He later got a judge to issue a corrupt order saying that his conviction was not justified. And we expect that is the current plan for Constant, that the government, which is from the same political, same part of the political spectrum as Constant, a lot of holdovers, including Jean-Robert Gabriel, from the 1991 to 94 dictatorship, that their plan is just to run quickly through the justice system, get a judge to issue a corrupt order saying that he's free and he's going to be free to pick up where he left off last time. One additional thing that he was convicted of, so he was convicted of murder in the Raboteau case, convicted in New York court of grand theft. He was also in a civil suit, he was found responsible. In a civil suit in New York, he was responsible for massive rapes in Haiti as well. So, I mean, he has a really long record. And when the judge sentenced him on the mortgage fraud, the judge said that he hoped that he served his entire 37-year sentence because he was such a dangerous person who'd done so many bad things. He did not serve. He was allowed out almost a year after he was first eligible for parole and is now being sent back to Haiti where he'll have no problem.
Yeah, and a lot of people right now are saying, well, the judicial system in Haiti, very, very weak, to say the least, and dominated by a lot of people put in place by this administration, the Moïse administration. Of course, the previous administration, Martelly, he and the present Jovenel Moïse, you know, are close. They're from the same political ilk and leaning and party as well. So they've had some say in looking at, you know, what the judicial system in Haiti looks at right now. But Brian Concanen, I mean, you were with part of our human rights delegation that I was on. I can't even remember. That was last year, wasn't it? Last spring, was it, Brian? Last April we were on the ground in Haiti. And you mentioned about the similarity between the Constant operation of terror and the operation of terror that's happening today, where you have a brutal government basically outsourcing, so to speak, in some instances, their reign of terror against communities that they see as strongholds of the opposition, right? When we were down there and meeting in the U.S. Embassy with the ambassador and many others there, with Congresswoman Maxine Waters, they were insisting that that really wasn't the case. There was no government connection with Haiti, that this was just all about gang warfare. And, you know, I really think, I may be wrong about this, but I also think there's a connection with the recent round of violence and massacres that have happened yesterday, started this weekend, because Constant was due back in Haiti on Tuesday. Now, that has been delayed because of the outcry of people like yourself and many others. But I see a connection, because people like Barbecue, who's now going around orchestrating, doing, in my view, the work that the government doesn't want to be seen to be doing, they're encouraged by somebody like Constant's return. What are your thoughts on that?
That's exactly part of the larger plan. And when we were last April, we were talking to victims, I mean, it was hearing their stories was soul crushing for a lot of reasons. And one of them was, to me, it sounded exactly like the stories I had heard 25 years ago talking to the victims of Constant. Hearing what the embassy said was exactly what the embassy was saying in 1993, denying, saying that it wasn't, that FRAP wasn't an organized death squad. It was just common crime that people were trying to politicize, and just dismissing and denying clearly political violence. And in that case, the U.S. knew exactly what was happening because Constant was a CIA asset. He was being paid by the CIA at the time. And someone like Barbecue is a lot like Joël Chamblain, who was Constant's number two. He'd come from the security forces and then moved on to being a death squad leader. And one of the concerns is that what Constant's going to do is to organize this and scale up what's been happening, you know, horrible events, but at a relatively low scale compared to what Constant did in 1991. But he's going to bring his organizational skills to increase this, to make it much more systematic and widespread.
Yeah, and help Jovenel Moïse to hold on to power. I mean, he's holding on just by a thread, given the massive protests against him. The numbers of those protests have clearly dropped because of COVID. And right now, indeed, in the Caribbean region, Haiti is a hot spot for COVID. Just in the last 3 days, the number of cases went up by 300, I understand, and is now in prisons in Haiti. But you know, Marla, Brian, not that.
Excuse me. I'd like to make one really important point tying in what you said before. One of the things that's happening is, you know, as you mentioned, billions of dollars stolen by the government. President Moïse's term ends in February. They can't allow a democratically elected president to take over because they're all going to be in jail. So one of the things that's up, and that's one of the things that's happening with the attacks this week in Cité Soleil, is they're trying to take control of neighborhoods so they can control voting centers, so they can prevent a democratically elected president from being elected and holding them to account.
That's right, and intimidating people in that. You're absolutely right about that. And I'm also reminded that not that long ago, there was an assassination attempt at a key member of the Lavalas executive, Pasha Vobre. We interviewed him at the time, but gunmen went into his house with long weapons. Luckily, he was not there, but they did threaten and say, "We have some bullets for you." We also know that the person that a lot of these types are after is the former president Aristide himself. So when they do things like this, when they bring back Constant, when they threaten somebody in the Lavalas executive the way they have, that is definitely sending a strong message. But that leads me into the fact Jean-Bertrand Aristide, of course, was a liberation theology priest before he was elected to become president, and remains the most popular political figure in Haiti today. But yesterday marked the death of Father Jean Jus. And Father Jean Jus was also a liberation theologist and servicing the poor. And Brian, I just wanted to lift him up a bit today and to play this short clip from Long Memory Productions. It's a memorial video. It's part of a memorial video of Gerard Jean Jus, Father Gerard Jean Jus, and then have your comments. Let's go to that clip now.
It's terrible to see Haitians, soldiers, military men, who were supposed to protect simple citizens, innocent citizens, unarmed civilians. They were supposed to protect them. They were the one killing them, and they are still doing that. They are the one raping children, women, sometimes in front of their parents, raping young children or raping parents. And it's terrible.
A 1,000 years ago, one man was fighting to get justice, just Jesus, and he's still alive. They kill his body, and they cannot kill justice. He is hope of justice for all those who are fighting to get justice.
I share the philosophy of President Harrison. I share the philosophy of Dr. King, of Gandhi. That's my style. That's the way I've been fighting all my life. But when you see soldiers shooting people in cold blood, you need to pray hard to God not to react violently.
In no other government in this hemisphere should be involved in the overthrowing of another government in this hemisphere that has been elected, recognized, constitutional.
Right, I'm going to have to end. We'll have to bring that clip down early. Brian Concana, we know you have a medical appointment you've got to dash off to. So just a very, very quick comment. I know you have about 30 seconds on Father Jean-Jules.
Sure. Father Jerry's one of these people that you think almost every week, if only he were here. I mean, he had such a prophetic voice, yeah, and had such credibility on the streets of Haiti among the poor, and was a liberation theologian who really put in practice the teachings of Jesus. The end of his clip, he was talking about overthrowing a government. That was referring to 2004 when the U.S. kidnapped President Aristide. Father Jerry was arrested. We represented him. He spent about a year and a half in jail for preaching justice, and he ended up dying of very suspicious circumstances. Most of his supporters and family believe he was poisoned, and believe he was poisoned exactly to keep him from speaking out in times like this. And so I think it's up to all of us, and I appreciate you doing this, to speak out how Father Jerry would want us to speak out against these kinds of injustice.
Right. Thank you, Brian Concanan, for all of your work. Take good care and stay safe now. All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. What I would like to do, though, if we are able to do this, can we play the rest of that clip about on Father Jean-Just? Yesterday marked the 11th anniversary of his death, and I actually recall Father Jean-Just spent time in prison. Of course, they came in and actually arrested him when he was feeding children in his church. I went to the prison where Father Jean-Just was and visited him. So did Congresswoman Maxine Waters. So he was a great loss for the Haitian people, just like the loss of Levinsky, Pierre Antoine, who disappeared mysteriously. His body was never found. And as Brian said, the death of Father Jean-Just, very suspect. Are we able to play the rest of that clip now?
Overthrowing of another government in this hemisphere that has been elected, recognized, constitutional. Every Sunday, the much we can, we feed the children. This food, this hot meal program has been taking place over 2 years now. And the people enjoy it, children particularly, they enjoy it. And once in a while, we distribute presents to them. Santa Claus came, friends come with gifts for them. It's a great time we having around here on Sunday. But we enjoy it. Look at the children, they enjoy the food. They would like to have 2 meals, 3 meals, 4 meals. But as long as you finish to serve everyone, the leftover, we're going to pass it out to the children also. But now, after serving the children, the program has been for the children first, and then we're going to go to the adults. Because the adults say, hey, what about us? We are people like everybody. We are children of God.
Amen. I'm under arrest, me and my hands are bleeding. And so they're taking me from one commissariat, from one headquarters, from my parish, now to Petroville. They're heading with me.
So they came to your church and arrested you while you were feeding the children? Yeah, Jean Jus has been a long time, as you said, pro-democracy advocate. He's a liberation theology priest and is much loved in the community. He's a man who's very well known for his strength and his courage. And as you said, tonight, Jean Jus has been arrested by the de facto government of Gerard Latortour.
And inside the jail now, they're still doing massacres. When I was there, I witnessed some terrible situation, beating, head broken, blood all over. One prisoner who died.
All righty, every Sunday, feed the children. And indeed, that was when he was arrested. At the time, we remember Father Jean Jus, Haitian liberation theology priest, and yesterday, Wednesday, marked the 11th anniversary of his death. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, our weekly Earth Watch with Amy Kobar, and also we will be doing an update on COVID-19. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Black 101. Fear is a magnetizer. It changes the polarity of black bodies, makes them highly attractive to bullets, police batons, tasers, white rage, white guilt, and blue-eyed blondes. Fear is a multiplier. It turns children into men, men and women into monsters, and non-compliant teens into dangerous gangs and threatening mobs. Fear is a magician. It turns hip-hop into gangster rap, plastic toys into guns, cigarillos, cell phones, wallets, brazenness, and extended index fingers into high-caliber weapons. Fear is a revisionist history class. It turns people of color into the enslavers, Confederate soldiers, lynch mobs, Klansmen, night riders, and terrorists. Fear is a sniper. It takes dead aim, aims to kill, kills for sport and pleasure, is pleased to take souvenirs, and stuffs and mounts its trophies.
There's a new day coming, everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? There's a new day coming. Everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? For far too many years, I've been marching, singing, and talking, doing things I thought would make me free. While people halfway around the world, they've been fighting and dying and bleeding. Now it seems that they're gonna be. There's a new world coming, everything gonna be turning over. Everything gonna be turning over. Where you gonna be standing when it comes? You know the book, the Bible, you read it and you see.
And that is the great Bernice Johnson Reagan, founder of Sweet Honey and the Rock, and There's a New Day Coming. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Check out our website at sotrueradio.org, our handle on Twitter and Instagram at sotrueradio. We're also on Facebook. You can like and friend us there. And we are worldwide on SoundCloud. And today I'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Donald's Donaldsonville, Louisiana. Donaldsonville, Louisiana. And internationally, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Spain. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Before we go to our Earth Watch guests, we just want to do a quick update on what is happening with COVID-19. And in fact, let's just start now with this clip from NBC News.
A grim milestone, 100,000. Americans from all walks of life, across generations. The New York Times filled its front page with just 1,000 of the grandfathers, grandmothers, husbands and wives, sons and daughters. 100,000 taken so fast by COVID-19, this country is still reeling in shock. Cody Lister of Colorado was a healthy 21-year-old kid.
Cody had the best smile in the world, and he would reach out and use that.
Korean War vet James Mandeville was 83 years old when COVID took him from his family. Dariana Dyson was just 15.
This hurts people. This hurts people in ways that they'll never be able to come back from.
In just a few short months, this pandemic sweeping the world has infected some 2 million here at home. Hospitals turned into battlefields.
It is absolutely heartbreaking. From the young to the old, they are all very sick.
Our new soldiers, the frontline workers, have fallen in service too. Chicago nurse Chris Guzman was a 35-year-old with three young children. Louisiana cop Mark Hall Sr. had 30 years on the force. Philip Dover, two decades driving a bus in New Jersey. And as we gingerly open up, perhaps wave from a safe distance, we have not had time to grieve.
Somebody who passes away has, you know, touched many other people's lives, and no one's here besides them but me.
100,000. The obituary names grow daily with no end in sight. Painful to learn of the hopes and dreams lost. And when we can't say goodbye in person, it hurts.
I give them a moment of silence and respect them because we all have loved ones out there.
We as survivors must remember, no one, no matter who they were, should leave this world alone.
Just incredible. I mean, just in a few months, imagine over 100,000 people. You know, it's a question Dr. Fauci posed, the question of how many deaths can we stomach? And meanwhile, in California, according to data compiled by the San Jose Mercury News, this is reported in Salon.com, there is a new spike of new cases in California on May 25th, breaking a previous one-day record from May 5th, when there were 2,546 cases were reported across the state. That's May 5th, and now 2,565 new cases in California on May the 25th. And, you know, as so many of the experts warned, with this opening up that has happened in California and other states, that we do see the possibility of spikes, putting people before, putting profits before people. Trump has pushed the state governors to reopen businesses despite warnings from health professionals. Now, every state has now reopened some non-essential businesses and eased at least some restrictions meant to curb the spread of the virus. However, states are moving at very different paces. Although nationally, new COVID-19 cases are thankfully on a gradual decline, but there are 13 states where the number of reported cases are trending up. This according to CNN. The states where daily new cases are increasing include Alabama, Arkansas, California, Florida, Maine, Mississippi, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and Wisconsin. Now, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, a former Food and Drug Administration commissioner, told CNBC on Wednesday, May 27th, that U.S. coronavirus hospitalizations have crept higher due to states' efforts to reopen and to return some semblance of normalcy. And in California, California health officials are warning us, saying, look, we have to be very, very careful with this reopening in California, because there is a thought that the spike happening now in California is as a result of the opening up. Now, across the world, COVID-19 is spreading faster in global south countries. I mentioned Haiti earlier in the previous segment, where in the last 3 days there have been 300 deaths. So that has really shot up in Haiti, the hotspot in the Caribbean. In Brazil, led by far-right President Jair Bolsonaro, is now the Latin American country hardest hit by the virus. In Brazil, over 25,000 people have died. Over 411,000 have contracted it. Trump took a similar approach. Bolsonaro took a similar approach to Trump. But now Trump has also closed the U.S. borders for people coming in from Brazil. Mexico is the second hardest hit Latin American country, with over 8,500 reported deaths and over 78,000 reported cases. And when we look at the African continent as a whole, there have been over 3,600 reported deaths and over 124,000 cases. But meanwhile, South Korea, that was held up as a big success story given their wide level of testing, one of the earliest places to be impacted by COVID-19 after China, has a death count of 269, with just over 11,000 reported cases. Imagine that, 269. The U.S. is a lot bigger country, but if you contrast the deaths in South Korea, it is way lower. However, the not so good news is that South Korea has retightened its lockdown restrictions after a spike in cases. Indonesia had over 1,400 people die from the virus, with over 24,000 reported cases. There's a lot of worry now about Indonesia and that the virus may become a runaway, especially given all of the islands that make up the nation of Indonesia. Sweden, over 4,200 people have died. Over 35,000 people have contracted COVID-19. And the UK has the second highest number of COVID fatalities, with over 3,700 reported deaths. And Boris Johnson, the Conservative Prime Minister there, very much, who himself had COVID, by the way, being criticized by the way his government has been handling the virus. And just finally, before we go on to our next segment, Black people in the United States continue to make up a disproportionate share of fatalities from COVID-19. You also see in the UK, for example, communities of color very, very hard hit. But in the US, nearly 23% of reported deaths are African American as of May 20th, according to CNBC. Now, contrast that Black people only make up 13% of the total U.S. population. In Georgia, which was one of the first Republican-led states to reopen, Black people represent 32% of the state's population, but account for roughly 47% of COVID-19 deaths. In Louisiana, Black people make up nearly 33% of the state's population, but account for 54% of deaths. Indigenous and Latino communities, very, very hard hit. Also, the Navajo Nation, now one of the hardest hit places per capita in the United States. Right now, a big crisis happening. The Navajo Nation has surpassed New York and New Jersey for the highest per capita coronavirus infection rate in the United States. This according to CNN. An example among the Latino population, very hard hit as well. In Rhode Island, for example, Latinos represent about 16% of the state's population, but make up about 43% of those testing positive for COVID-19. This according to the Department of Health. And also in Chicago, the Latino infection rate also very, very high. So we just wanted to share with you some of the update, given the grim milestone, now over 100,000 deaths in the United States. We are now going to wrap our show up with our weekly Earth Watch. And I would like to welcome Amy Kober. She is the Vice President for Communications at American Rivers, a national river conservation organization. She's led successful communications campaigns for high-profile river restoration, protection, and clean water priorities, and directs America's Most Endangered Rivers, one of the best-known public engagement initiatives in the conservation community. This is our weekly Earth Watch series. Amy Kober, thank you for joining us.
Margaret, thanks for having me.
So, rivers, I love rivers. I imagine practically everybody does. And one is always alarmed at the level of contamination happening in the rivers in this country, also in other parts of the world. But tell us your concerns now about rivers and the coronavirus.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we all love rivers. I think everybody, most people have some river, some special stream or river that flows through your life. And they're also so important for our drinking water, for our community health, for our economy, for everything. Rivers run through our nation in so many ways. And this coronavirus pandemic has really exposed some longstanding injustices when it comes to clean water in our country. I'm a mom. I have two little boys. And imagine all of the people in our country. There are millions of people in our country who don't have clean water in their homes. And what's the one thing that public health officials have been telling us to do to stay safe and healthy? It's wash our hands. Well, imagine you're a parent. You're trying to keep your family healthy, but you don't have clean water in your home. And you mentioned, Margaret, you mentioned the Navajo Nation. Not only are a lot of these communities places where the virus is hitting so hard, a lot of these communities are also communities where there hasn't been the water infrastructure investment, or they're dealing with water contamination, and so they don't have clean water. And these are in urban and rural areas. So we're seeing, this is a problem in normal times, and of course it's even more a problem during a pandemic. There are some really fantastic frontline organizations working on this in California, the Community Water Center, Self-Help Enterprises, Clean Water Action. They've been on top of this problem for a long time, and now the pandemic is really bringing it to a national spotlight. But water is life. It's a human right. Everybody needs it.
Yeah, and there was a report in Truth Out about overwhelmed sewers can contaminate bodies of water with high levels of harmful bacteria found in human waste. And now with COVID-19, that's really a problem. And so just tell us a little bit more about that, about how, what direct, if any, or indirect connections they are with the water contamination and COVID. But also, you underscored the lack of access to water in huge swaths of the Navajo nation, the Navajo land. And a lot of people would be shocked to hear that, especially in people who live in urban areas and are used to just turning the tap and turning your water on, but also in people in other parts of the world who have no idea that there are Native American nations within the United States and part of the Black Belt South where people don't have running water and don't have access to clean water.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of people have their water shut off every year because they can't pay their bills. And I think that that's going to, people are out of work now more than ever, and that's increasing, and that's a problem. And just in 2019, 200,000 Californians lost their drinking water, their tap water, because of water shutoffs. And so it's just a compounding problem. But you asked about the wastewater problem. So the virus has been found in untreated wastewater. According to the CDC, the researchers don't know whether this can cause the disease if a person is exposed to that wastewater. I don't think there's any data yet that people have become sick because of exposure to wastewater, but we're learning every week I think there's new information coming in about this virus and our exposure and threats, and so it's just something that we need to absolutely keep an eye on. And it brings up a broader point about our nation's water infrastructure. The American Society of Civil Engineers grades infrastructure. Last year, they did their report card. Wastewater got a D+. That's not a good grade when it comes to public health and safety. So coronavirus or not, we have got to do a better job investing in our drinking water, in our wastewater systems. All of this is tied to clean water, public health, equity, community well-being, and our economy. Clean water is absolutely essential to our economy and our future. So we've got to invest in it, and we have to prioritize it. And in addition to the investments that we need Congress to make, we've got to hold firm on our protections, the Clean Water Act and these key protections. President Trump, just about a week ago, issued another executive order to agencies to roll back more regulations. And this has been ongoing, but it's a real threat to our public health and to our environment. So now is not the time to be gutting these safeguards that our communities rely on.
Right, and we have to remember, too, that the rivers, they flow into the sea, they flow into the oceans. And already I saw a report where in our oceans, they're already finding masks, right? They're already finding surgical gloves. But when you have this contaminated water, and environmental biologists at the University of Stirling, they have warned that the potential spread of COVID-19 via sewage must not be neglected. As you say, there aren't any direct reports on that right now, but they say it must not be neglected to battle and protect human health. But I'm also thinking of our relatives that live in the water. You know what I mean? The sea life there. And the impact that all of this might have on them. Just some final thoughts from you on that. And also for people who want to be in touch with your organization and find out more about what you're doing and support your efforts, also tell us what they should do. Amy.
Yeah. Well, right. Rivers connect us all. They connect us upstream and downstream to each other, to our communities. They connect us to the fish and the otters and the eagles and the bears. And you said, our relatives, it's the whole web of life, right? And we're a part of it. And we have a really important responsibility to be good stewards of our rivers that are just the lifelines and the lifeblood of our land and our communities. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this with you. And if people want to learn more about American Rivers, we're at AmericanRivers.org. You can visit our website. You can follow us on social media. And we always love to hear about people's river stories and people's river connections, and want to hear about the issues facing rivers where your listeners live too. So would love for folks to reach out.
Well, thank you so very much for joining us. And thank you for the work that you're doing, Amy Kobar. We also want to thank the Global Justice Ecology Project. We partner with them for our weekly Earth Watch. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Margaret.
All righty. We're out of time. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, including assistant producer Romero Funes, and today's audio engineer. I'd like to thank the Global Justice Ecology Project. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. And remember to visit our website, sotruradio.org. Follow us on Facebook. Our handle on Twitter and Instagram @SoTrueRadio. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.